Les colloques du Collège de France.
So the next talk is given by Evie Nealon. So she is a doctoral student at the University of Technology of Eindhoven with Karen Verhoey. And so she will present an efficient greedy sampling for model order reduction.
Yes, thank you for the introduction and the invitation to speak here. I should mention first that this is joint work with Karen Verhoey and Oliver Tse, both from Eindhoven University of Technology. And as Yvonne mentioned, I'm going to talk about efficient greedy sampling for model order reduction. So the outline of today looks something like this. We start with explaining a broad class of functions that we are interested in, which is configuration optimization problems. I think many of you might not have heard the term, but have seen examples of it, and I will explain it with examples as well. Then I will explain how we do the efficient greedy sampling in higher dimensions with the randomized polytope division method. We show convergence results for this, and we have numerical examples to show you, including based on random fields. But first, the problem. So let's look at configuration optimization problems, and let's look at a very simple toy problem. So configuration optimization problems always contain three elements. I need to have a compact set P of parameters. I have some configuration of points eta in some larger space, and I have some Lush function. So if I think about a very simple example, which would be piecewise linear interpolation, so suppose I have some function that I want to interpolate piecewise linearly, then I could add points somewhere in my parameter space and just do a piecewise linear interpolation. And then, as I mentioned, I also have a loss function. So what would be the loss, for example? Well, the area between my interpolation and my function. The question that you could ask now is where to put these points, because it matters, because if you put the points somewhere else, you get a different loss function. And typically, we want to reduce the loss in these type of settings. But there's also an example of a configuration optimization problem that most of you are familiar with, which would be the reduced basis setting. So suppose I have some PDE with some parameter influence P, then this P lives in some compact space, calligraphic P, and we have a mapping from each of these parameters to some high-dimensional solution manifold. And then I could approximate the solution manifold with some linear reduced basis. And then the loss in this case would be the maximum projection error onto my linear space. And the configuration of points would be precisely the thing that spans this linear space, which would be the solutions, which would be the parameters that I choose to compute the full solution for to describe this space. Yeah, as I said, the loss function would be this projection error. And also, particularly for these type of examples, we expect to have some error estimate that we could actually compute. So again, to summarize, for a configuration optimization problem, we need three things. We need a compact parameter space, we need a loss function, and we need a configuration. And this configuration is sort of going to minimize my loss function. Now, to solve this configuration optimization problem exactly is, in most cases, not possible. So what I'm going to explain next is, again, the greedy method, which would be a way to heuristically come to the solution, where I am going to select a configuration one by one. So I will be brief here, but what would the greedy method look like in the most simple case? I start with a random point that I just add to my configuration. Then I sample a large parameter set in my parameter space. And for each of these points, I'm going to compute the error estimate that I have. This error estimate is cheap, and therefore I can select the point with the maximum error. Then I can add that to my configuration, and I update and repeat. And this will give me not precisely the solution of a configuration optimization problem, but at least heuristically, it's doing something sensible. And this method works especially in lower dimensions, and I think many of you have seen examples of this. Now, the problem is precisely when you go to higher dimensions. Why? Because I mentioned this error estimate is cheap, but if you're going to do it a lot, it's still going to be expensive in higher dimensions. And why would you do it a lot? Well, this method works because your sample set is sort of a representation of your parameter space, but if you go into higher dimensions, you will need more and more points to cover your parameter space, and you will face the curse of dimensionality. So, to overcome this problem, we developed a polytope division method, and that is what I will explain to you now. How does it work? Well, first I will explain to you the vanilla method, and then I will explain to you why you would want to add randomization to this algorithm. First of all, we make the assumption now that the parameter space is always some hyper rectangle like this, and then what we're going to do is we're going to look at the facets of my hypercube. Why? Because in dimension D, I know that every hypercube has 2 times D facets. So that's a linear scaling with respect to the dimension. What am I going to do now? Again, something greedy ask as before. But now I'm going to sample a random point. I say random, it's in the middle here for aesthetic purposes, but in the algorithm it will be random. And then I'm going to connect this point to all the facets of my hyperrectangle. What I'm going to do next is I'm going to compute the barycenters of all these polytopes. So I now divided my parameter space into polytopes, and I'm going to consider the barycenters as proxy of the error that I expect inside my polytope. Then I'm going to do the same. I'm going to select the maximum. I add that to my configuration, and I split the parameter domain by connecting this point to all the facets of the polytope that I'm in now. And then I compute all the barycenters again, I update and repeat. So this is the vanilla original polytope division method, and it has good scaling probabilities, but it also has some issues. So and these issues will be addressed with the randomization. So one of the issues that we can see in this problem is explorability. So as I said, the barycenter is your proxy of the error inside your polytope, but it could be a wrong proxy, and it could be that the error inside your barycenter is very low, well, whereas there's actually some place where the error is higher. So you need to explore more than just the barycenter. The second thing is convergence proof. Like for this type of system, it's going to be very hard to prove any type of convergence. But if you add randomization, that is actually going to help you. So now we have the randomized polytope division method. It works sort of similar. So we start again with a random point. We connect to all the facets. Then we again compute all the barycenters. But now I add my randomization. So in the greedy methods that I presented so far, you always select a maximum, which is intuitively a good idea because that will give you the best improvement. But sometimes it could be that the second largest point is also a very good point to add to your configuration, and you will miss that if you only select the maximum. So what we're going to do now is we're going to again compute the errors, but then we're going to weight all the errors based on how large it is. So you're still more likely to pick a point with a higher error and less likely to pick a point with a lower error. Then I'm going to, again, add more randomization. So based off these weights, I select one of the polytopes. I'm now going to randomly sample inside my polytope. I connect to the facets again. And then the third randomization that I add is to address the explorability. So in this step, I notice that my error estimates are very low, but maybe I still want to explore something inside my polytope division, so I'm going to resample them. And then I'm going to compute the barycenters of the new regions, and I'm going to resample these points, and this is the division that I consider in the next step. I should mention here, like, this is not the only division of parameter space method that exists. There's more works out there. This is not an extensive list, but just so you know. Then, one thing I should mention about this, so all the pictures that I've shown so far are two-dimensional, because that's easier to understand, but this also gives you triangles in every step, which is a two-dimensional simplex. If you go higher dimensional, you do have the situation that you're not always end up with a simplex anymore. So in the first division step in a 3D cube, you see that you get a pyramid, and then if you do another division step, you see that you get a pyramid here, and then four simplices. I left one out here for visibility. And then the question that you can ask you is, well, okay, but now you want me to compute facets and high-dimensional polytopes, and I also wonder, do we still keep the satisfactory scaling properties? So do we still have that we have at most two times the facets in each step? And the answer to both of them is yes. So to address the first question, can we still find the facets in high-dimensional polytopes? In general, no. In general, you are in trouble here. What saves us is that we have so much structure from the hypercube that we begin with, and we know in each step what we're going to do to divide the space. And then that helps us to actually address the facets, and it's all quite efficient to actually work it out if you know the structure. And same, we keep the satisfactory scaling properties, and we also proof this in this paper. The other benefit that I mentioned of randomness is that it can help us in the convergence proof. So that's what we're going to consider now. So how is this going to help us to prove convergence? Well, first, we're going to notice that we can make a connection to birth processes in this greedy algorithm. So how does this work? Well, essentially, a birth process is a process where I birth points inside a space in each time step. But that's exactly what I'm doing here. I'm selecting points in each time step that I add to some configuration. So if I relax this whole idea of greedy methods a bit, I can look at some configuration at time t, then at another time step, I transition to t with y according to some transition kernel lambda. And this lambda is telling me how much mass I place on regions in my parameter space to add a new point in my new time step. And this y is called the newborn particle. This I mentioned. Okay, how does this help us? Well, it helps us because now we're considering a stochastic process that is also a Markov process. So we can have all the tools from this theory to help us in a convergence proof. What are these tools that we want to consider? Well, first of all, we want to consider the generator of this process. And for people that are not so familiar with stochastic processes, think about the generator as the generalization of your differential operator. So when you have no stochasticity, your differential operator is telling you what is happening, the rate of change of your function in an infinitesimal time step. Now, the generator is doing sort of the same, except you have now some probability distribution that is telling you which way you can go. And if we look at this expression, so we have some test function f, some observable. I add a point to my configuration. I look at the difference to the value of this observable in my previous step. And then this is the rate of me selecting this y point to my configuration. And then I integrate over all the possible points that I could add to my system. Why do we need this object? That is because this object pops up in the forward Kolmogorov equations. So the forward Kolmogorov equations is going to tell me something about how the density of all the configurations that I could consider is evolving over time. So in this equation, Pt is the law of my configuration at time t. What is this saying is if I start with some initial condition, I'm going to run my stochastic process, then this is telling me how likely it is that a certain configuration pops up at time t. And why is this expression helping me? Because this has to be true for every test function f. So for example, I could see the test function that is my error estimate, so the thing that I'm essentially interested in. And here this bracket notation is the integral, so the expectation of my function f. Good, so how does it help us? Well, this can help us to formulate a convergence theorem, but under some assumptions. So now we address the convergence results, but first I will address the assumptions that we have. Some of them are really standard, these assumptions. So now we look at G, where G is sort of, it's considered your loss function. It's a global error function that doesn't depend on points. We have some boundedness. So if you look at the initial configuration where you just have one particle selected, we say that this is bounded. The second assumption that we have is some monotonicity. This is saying, so I'm going to one by one add particles to my configuration, and I'm not going to do worse. So adding particles will help me to reduce my overall loss. Think, for example, in reduced basis settings of elliptic PDEs, then we know that this is true, this holds true. Third, I have some saturation property. What this is saying is, if I know that no point that I can add will give me an improvement, then that means that my error is already zero. And then the last one is the most hard to comprehend, but I'm still going to show it to you. We need a bunch of constants, so a gamma, a delta, a beta, and some set in my parameter space, such that I have some improvement in each step. But let me take a step back and address this specific assumption with a picture. What it's essentially saying is, I have some gamma between 0 and 1, such that, and some set B of eta that is dependent, that is at least has mass delta, so some positive mass bounded away from 0, such that if I add a point in my next step from this set, then I will have some improvement that is strict, because this is between 0 and 1. For the people that are paying very close attention, there was more on the previous slide. So now I'm saying I have improvement in each step, but this improvement is the same. Improvement is the same for each step. But I can imagine that the further I am in my algorithm, so the more points I've already selected, the less improvement I would expect from my error. So what we also have is we have some situations where we change this gamma with some eta to the power beta. So this is saying the more points I have, the less I expect to improve in later steps. And then this beta can be between 0 and 1. And obviously, dependent on what this beta is, I expect more or less from my system. So we can also see this back in the convergence rates. So if we look at the convergence rates, we have the following theorem. So we have a result in high probability. Why? Because everything is stochastic, so we're not going to get a deterministic proof that we always go down. But what it's saying is for every epsilon that I can have that is larger than 0, there exists some constant also larger than 0 such that the probability that at time t I'm less than epsilon will be larger or equal to 1 minus this constant and this theta factor, where this part is going to converge to 0. So that means if my time is going to infinity, my probability that I'm less than some epsilon is going to go to 1, which is what I want in this setting. But then I said you can have different values for beta, and you can also see this back in the convergence rates. So if my beta is 0, so that means the improvement that I expect in each step is completely independent of the size of my configuration, I have exponential rates. If beta is in between 0 and 1, I have polynomial rates, and for beta is 1, I have logarithmic rates. So this last thing would not be great, but that is what we get if you this is what you expect. So this is what I have on convergence results. And this theorem is good because at least we can have something that asymptotically we expect to go to 0, we go to 1, so my error is going to 0 in my algorithm. But for the people paying attention, like the theorem depends on the transition kernel lambda, not necessarily on the transition kernel lambda dependent on RPDM. So I could have multiple transition kernels that satisfy the assumption, and then I have the same type of convergence rates. And the first numerical example that we're going to look at is going to show that, yes, I have this convergence result, and I'm happy with that, but it's not the full story yet. Why? Because what we're going to do is we're going to look at the interpolation example. We're going to have the piecewise interpolation of my function. And now we're going to compare the RPDM scheme with just uniform sampling. So uniform sampling means I just pick at random points between 0 and 10, which is my interval. So I have no information on the system. This rate function still satisfies all the assumptions, the same way as RPDM does. And we can also see that in the results that we get. But this is where the story is not complete, is that we can also see that the variance for this case is much higher. So to take you through it step by step, we again have this configuration where I select my points. We have a global error now, which is going to be the L1 error of my piecewise approximation and my function. And I have some local error that sort of tells me something about the global error in that it is the error inside each point. And then if we do the experiments and we look at the expectations, so my global error function, we see that both for uniform sampling and for RPDM, it's going to converge exponentially. And this is the average in terms of the algorithm. So I run both algorithms 1,000 times, I get a bunch of points, and then I compute the average error that I get in all these cases. But now, we can also look at the variance of the method. So, as I said, the uniform sampling assumes no information, and you see that back in the variance. So, in the end, even though you have the convergence, you have also variance that is still quite high. Why? Because in some runs, I do something sensible, and in some runs, I probably won't. Whereas the RPDM, where in every iteration, you try to zoom into the error of in the regions with higher error, you see that you get much lower variance. So we have the theoretical results of the error. We don't have theoretical results of the variance, but a next step would be to think about the variance because it's also important in your methods. Then my final two examples are both based on random fields. So we now have, again, an elliptic equation, but now I have some term here that is described by a random field. And we can describe this via its Kerhune-Loewe expansion. So this is your average field, and then you have this part that comes from the Kerhune-Loewe expansion. And now your parameters are given basically by this yk, which are random variables. But obviously, we're not going to look in a numerical example when we go to infinity. So in practice, we truncate this to some finite number. And there's been many works on this before. But before I'm going to show you these results, I'm going to tell you what we compare it with. And this was actually a suggestion that was made by Albert at a previous conference, which is the half-splitting method. So what is half-splitting? As I said, all the results that we have depends on my rate kernel. You could do a different splitting algorithm if you want. So what you could alternatively do is if you want to look at boxes instead of polytopes, then we can do sort of the same thing. But now the difference is once you select a point in how you're going to split. So what you could also do alternatively, if you say this is the point that I'm going to add to my configuration, I'm now going to split this parameter space in two. And I again resample all the barycenters that are low. As I said, many algorithms are out there. If by any chance anyone knows a good way to cite this one, then I would happy to hear about it. The only work that I want to mention is it's closely related to something introduced by Olga and Diane. But this is a library-based approach, so it's not completely the same, but it's closely related. And I would say the main difference between what I presented and this is, in this case, you always split some part in two. And in the polytope case, you always split into, you get D, or in between D and 2D extra polytopes in each step. So we're going to compare it with this. As for the splitting direction, there are several options. We test three of them. I'm not going to go into the details, but you will see the different variants in the numerical results. So, as a first toy example, I consider a random field where I have uniformly distributed random variables between minus a half and a half. I have 100 parameters. So very high dimensional, and if I wanted to do the classic greedy, then this would be probably a problem. And my average field is one. I'm not actually going to consider a Kohune-Loewe expansion, but something that at least mimics it for this first example. And this one was taken in this work from Chen, Cartaroni, and Rotta. What we do is we run the algorithm and we're going to construct a reduced basis for this. Again, like constructing a reduced basis for an example with a random field was not our idea. This is first introduced in this work of Boyeval. We run this until we hit a tolerance of 10 to the minus 4, and our stopping criterion is our error estimate inside the points that we consider. Times the volume. And why do we add the volume is because now we have randomness, so if we're less likely to sample in a certain region, we also want to express this in the stopping criterion. And what we see is, first, this is the convergence inside the training set. And what we notice is RPEM stops a lot earlier than the half algorithms. And you can wonder what effect that has on the actual errors that you will find. So, for example, we can look at the average of the random field. So this is different than the average that I considered before, which was the average over the polytope division, but this is the average of my random field solution. So each PDE solution is dependent on a random variable, and I can, in each of my finite element points, I can compute the solution and then look at the difference if I do the same for my reduced basis solution. And we consider 40,000 Monte Carlo samples. And we see that we are converging, so the RPDM is stopping before the half algorithms, but we wanted something on the lines of 10 to the minus 4, and both are going on longer. Now, the question that you can ask is, well, this is going on longer, so I have a lower difference, essentially. So isn't that better? Yes, but then it also costs you more to have all these basis factors in there. And the same thing is, we can consider the variance of my solution, my PDE solution, and we again see that we're going down to 10 to the minus 7 and 10 to the minus 9 for all the half-splitting algorithms here. And lastly, we also do a verification. So instead of these Monte Carlo samples, we again take a large sample set, and then we look at what the maximum error is actually doing in all these verification sets and the average error. And we see that RPDM here almost reached the tolerance that we were interested in, and the half algorithms go on longer. And for the average error, they both exceed the 10 to the minus 4. Now, this was a toy example, and we noticed already some differences here. And then in the next example, we actually sort of noticed the opposite effect. So my next example is, we have log normal coefficients, so not just uniform ones. And we have something that my random field is dependent on this exponential. And then these yk's are standardly normally distributed. And we have 25 parameters now. And then we consider these functions, which comes from a Brownian sheet model. And well, the first thing that you can wonder is, well, everything you presented so far was based on this assumption that you're in a hypercube. And now you're considering normally distributed ones, which are going to infinity. But we can be saved here because they are all independently identically distributed. So what we can do is we can look at the probability integral transform. So this maps uniformly distributed random variables to normally distributed ones, and this way we can still look inside a box and then transform a problem so we have the normally distributed ones. And then again, so we have this log normal, not affine function here. So we have to use EIM to get an approximation of this. And then we do sort of the same. We now go to a tolerance of 10 to the minus 3. We have the same stopping criterion. And what we see now is the convergence inside the training set. We have the opposite effect, so RPDM is going on longer than the half algorithms. Again, then we can wonder what the effect is on the average and the variance, and we see that for the average, it looks like we're plateauing on the RPDM, and the same is sort of true for the variance, but then the real difference comes in when I do the verification. So if I do the verification at the end, what I notice here is if I look at the maximum error, the half algorithms are not reaching that. The RPDM is reaching that, but this one just stops here. I think one of the reasons is that you explore a bit less, so the algorithm sort of thinks you're finished earlier, but I must say this is sort of some preliminary results, so I don't know everything, the answers to everything on this. And then when we look at the average error, everything is sort of going down, and also the half algorithms are going down further than 10 to the minus 3. So some concluding remarks here. We introduced a greedy scalable greedy type method, the randomized polytope division method. We showed some convergence results for stochastic greedy processes. We have applications to piecewise interpolation and random fields. Future work would be convergence of the variance, but also more on this random fields and seeing what is actually happening here. Yes, and I have a bunch of references, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.